How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 220 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head out to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, subscribe to the podcast there, leave a review once you're on that page, and find us on audioboom.com, too. You can log on to normantranscript.com. Check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. You can see Thunder coverage, free agency coverage, all the re-signings and other team signings and draft stuff and weird Terrence Ferguson stories and whatever else is going on. I'm on every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. That really hasn't been the case during free agency when I'm on Saturdays. And guess what? Now I'm on Thursday for another emergency podcast. I recorded a podcast at 2 a.m. This is the third time I've podcasted after midnight Eastern time. And Eastern time counts because I'm in Orlando for Summer League. It's the third time this week that I podcasted after midnight because the Thunder will only make moves at weird hours of the day. That's just how they operate, apparently, or at least that's how they're operating since the start of free agency. Here to join me to discuss the reported three-year, $30 million re-signing of Andre Roberson is probably the biggest pro-Andre Roberson person outside of Oklahoma City, from Vice Sports, Michael Pina.
Hello, Fred. How are you?
You sound extremely unexcited to be here.
As you said, I mean, it's 12:08 right now. You got me out of bed to do this. I'm very excited. Andre Roberson, as you said, one of my favorite players to watch, and I'm happy that he got paid.
You got yourself out of bed to be here. You didn't. No one forced you out of bed. We're very far away from each other. That's Skype
true.
Call away, but we're physically very far away from each other. You got yourself out of bed. You saw Andre Roberson getting an eight-figure annual salary, and you leapt out of bed, and you screamed so loud you woke up the whole block.
You know, that's a fair assessment of what happened, I would say. Yeah.
So what are so 3 for $30 for Roberson? What are your initial thoughts on the deal?
What was the initial extension offer before the season? Was it 4 for $48?
Yeah, so the Thunder offered him 4 for $48, and he turned it down. So obviously that's not what he wanted. He's going to slot into the shooting guard role right now. He was at small forward last year. He's going to play shooting guard now, which is where they prefer him. The organization has always liked him more as a shooting guard. I mean, I think they think he's a really good defensive player no matter who he's guarding on the wings. But they just prefer him against twos. They think that's where he's best. You know, the kind of the James Harden-y types of players they think he's best against, although they're perfectly comfortable with him guarding anybody as big as like Giannis or LeBron or something like that. They prefer him against those Harden types. I think his length bothers ball handlers like that more. So they kind of like that more. So they're going to use him. They're going to get to use him more in those sorts of situations the upcoming season. If they're right, maybe he has an even better defensive season. Yes, he turned down 4 for $48. In the fall in an extension. He did not make that back.
Right. So, I mean, just on that alone, I mean, it's a good deal for the Thunder. I like it a lot. It kind of rings with the pattern that we've seen throughout free agency of these. A lot of guys are signing three-year deals when you would expect longer. Drew Holiday is really the only five-year deal I can think of. Patty Mills got four. But a lot of really talented players are signing for shorter-term deals. And, I mean, I think it's a sign of, obviously, the fear of the cap flattening out more dramatically than I think some teams may have anticipated. Luxury tax payments on the horizon. I think this deal pushes the Thunder over the luxury tax threshold. Is that correct?
That's right. They're at right now about a little under, I think they're at $122.7 million, according to my very raw calculations in my head with this. But I think they're at 122.7. Luxury tax threshold is 119.3. But that doesn't include Terrence Ferguson, whose rookie scale number is about $1.5 million. So he'll make somewhere between like 1.2 and 1.8, depending on what percentage of the rookie scale he ends up signing for. That's going to be on the books no matter what. They still need a backup point guard. They still need to fill out the rest of the roster. I mean, they're not done. So there could be a point. I'm not saying they'll finish there, but there could be a point where they're way over the threshold.
Yeah, and I mean, they should. It's fine. I mean, it's not my money, but I feel like pay the tax. Like, you have the Paul George thing hanging over your head, where, you know, he can dart away after this season. Russell Westbrook has yet to sign his extension. So I like the aggressiveness. I like the Patrick Patterson contract. I thought that was one of the best deals of the summer that we've seen so far. And, you know, this is a value play as well. I thought Robertson was going to get paid a little bit more. I know he has, you know, incredible shortcomings on the offensive end. But, you know, in my opinion, he's the best defender at his position. I think we both think he's, you know, one of the five best all-around defenders in the league. You really can't put a price tag on someone who can make guys like Kawhi Leonard, James Harden really work for, you know, touches, space. So he's an incredibly valuable player. He will be even more valuable, I think, with Paul George not having to assume that responsibility anymore. So that's a big plus. Yeah, it's a really good sign for him. I think Sam Presti's having just one hell of an offseason.
He is, right? I mean, I don't want to give the Thunder too much credit for getting a good deal on Robertson, partly because this is just kind of how the market has played out. Like, restricted free agents just aren't going to get a lot, and it's not because of the Thunder. It's because of how the market has played out. There's a third the amount of total cap space this summer as there was last summer. Last year was like $1 billion. This year it's like under $400 million. Like, there's a slew of reasons, and you know what? Like, there's a lot of luck beyond that on the Thunder side. Like, the Thunder offered him 4 for $48. He could have signed that. And if the Thunder's like they got away with getting him $30 million in guaranteed money, but them getting him $30 million in guaranteed money instead of 48 is not their own doing. It's just Robertson missing out on an opportunity that they offered him, right? So I don't want to give them, I mean, that's luck. And I'm not saying that's worth bashing them for. If they brought him back for $12 million a year, I think that was a fine and fair deal as well. I think Robertson, compared to what he's going to give them, I think you can make an argument he's making a little bit less. And I think people thought he was going to be in that $12 to $15 million range this summer too. But it's, I don't want to praise too much for the contract, because I think there are external circumstances which kind of brought them to this number, you know?
Yeah, no, it's gambling. Like, basically, I mean, I don't know how you would, I don't think anyone really foresaw how restricted this market would be for a lot of these guys who passed up opportunities to sign extensions, before the season started. Yeah, I mean, it did work out for them. They are an incredibly intelligent front office. I would say that I don't want to talk too much about Paul George, even though I haven't had an opportunity to really
talk all you want about Paul George. Paul George, it's been not even a week since Paul George is not even technically yet on the Thunder. I don't think you can talk too much about the best player the Thunder have ever acquired in a non-draft situation.
Right, so when that trade went down, I was at a wedding in Ecuador, so I literally have not been able to discuss this with any NBA people. My thoughts on this trade.
No NBA reporters in Ecuador?
There were none. No, it was crazy. You'd expect there to be a little bit more vibrancy down there, but no one was really talking about the Paul George trade to the Oklahoma City Thunder. But I will say, you know, that trade is one of the weirder trades that I think I've ever seen. It made such little sense to me. I'm looking at it from the perspective of what we all thought George's market value was. Victor Oladipo coming off the season he had, Sabonis, you know, a fine rookie, but I mean, it's Paul George, and I don't care that it's Paul George on a potential rental. Like, I just thought it was very absurd. And for the Thunder to not only get Paul George, but to shed Oladipo's contract, I mean, it's just like, that was just Yaman's work. It was incredible.
Yes, it was. And they didn't just shed long-term money. They shed short-term money. They saved about $4 million in that deal for 2017-18. Like, it wasn't like they just – they got the best player in the deal, and they brought back less salary in the deal. That to me, like, is the weirdest part of it.
Like, can you – I'm sure you've discussed this on your podcast before, but I'm just curious because we have not talked about it. What was your initial reaction when you heard the news? Were you like stunned?
Someone asked me that on the radio, and it was like late. It was like 10 p.m. or 9:45 or something like that. And I had just gotten into Orlando, and I was in my hotel, and I was writing up a news around Blake Griffin that I was going to order up room service. And my reaction was, "Damn, I'm not going to get to order up room service." Because I immediately had to write. And that was truly my reaction. And then about 5 minutes later, as I was writing it, I was like, holy, Thunder got Paul George. That's crazy. And it didn't quite hit me. I was so hungry. All I had was a Caesar salad for lunch at like 1 o'clock in the Houston airport. And I was so hungry.
Good discipline. Good discipline, Fred.
I've been eating very well lately.
I'm proud of you.
I got too fat. I just got too fat. I've been very good in Orlando.
You're not – well, we'll be healthy eating buddies in Vegas. How does that sound?
Yes. No, we have to. I've been off carbs, off sugar, off dairy. I don't need them.
Okay, good. I need a partner in this because Vegas food is – I know we're getting off track, but Vegas food is just – it'll kill you.
So here's how tied to food all of the Thunder breaking news is for me, at least in the last week. Today I decided, you know what, I'm going to go out for like a nice meal in Orlando. So I took myself, and I'm fortunate that I didn't go with anybody. I went with myself. I was like, I'm going to listen to a podcast and maybe read a little bit, have a nice meal. I'm waiting on my tuna steak. I'm very hungry. It's already kind of late. And as the tuna arrives, Woj breaks the news. I was like, are you kidding me? So I have to whip out my computer, and I got to write right there in the restaurant. So then I had to eat my cold tuna steak. So it all comes full circle with this Roberson stuff. It always comes back to food.
It always comes back to food. Was the tuna steak good?
It was good. It wasn't quite hot enough, but the mushrooms, I also got a side of sauteed mushrooms, which were actually quite delicious.
You can't go wrong with sauteed mushrooms. Yeah, that's a good call. I like that. I was into it. Now I'm hungry.
Where does Andre Roberson, Paul George rank amongst the best defensive wing combinations of any starting lineup in the NBA?
I mean, you're setting me up with this question.
Number one or number two?
It's
not Boston.
So it's – I know it's not Boston. Thank you. you know, I don't know. I would say an engaged Paul George is up there and can really – it could boost them to number one. But, I mean, I guess the only other serious competitor here is Kawhi and Danny Green, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd rather have Kawhi and Danny Green because Kawhi is the best of those four. But I think Roberson is better than Danny Green. I think Danny Green is
no
great.
Question.
I think Danny Green is great. Like my I think Danny Green's fantastic. Like I on my fake all defense ballot, like Roberson and or Danny Green was on my first team. Along with, I don't remember who the other guy I had. I think I had Chris Paul as my other first team guard, or maybe Beverly, I don't remember. But I remember specifically putting Danny Green on my first team. So I think Danny Green is incredible, but I think Roberson is the best defensive shooting guard in the NBA. And putting him next to Paul George, that's going to be rangy. Like the Thunder now that they officially have him back, they're about as well-equipped. Now, no one can, like, guard the Warriors well because they're too good. They're the cheat code. They break the game. No one's going to guard them well. But the Thunder are about as well equipped to guard the Warriors stylistically, schematically, probably, because I think Billy Donovan is a pretty good defensive coach. And talent-wise, Thunder are probably about as well equipped to guard that team or teams of that style, teams like maybe Houston, stuff like that. They are really well done to guard teams like that with their like these rangy, switchy, athletic, and long and intelligent defenders. They could be an extremely good defensive team this year.
You know who I just thought of? I don't know if we want to put them in this conversation. But the Milwaukee Bucks with Giannis and Chris Middleton, just in terms of, you know, teams that have just incredible length on the perimeter that can switch out beyond the 3-point line and really take away those looks off DHO and stuff like that. So I would maybe throw them into this conversation. Maybe
yeah, that's a good
too
one.
Premature with Giannis.
No, yeah, that's a good one. Giannis is really good. I think they're definitely in the conversation, and I'm happy to give them a top five spot, which means they're pretty damn good. Yeah, I don't know if Giannis is all the way there yet. Like, he will be, for sure. There's no question in my mind he'll be there. But I don't know if he's all the way there defensively right now. And Middleton is. I think Middleton's a better defender than Giannis is today, especially on the perimeter.
I might give the edge to Giannis just because he can – I think he's a better rebounder and a rim protector, so he kind of adds a little bit more the dimensions of his defensive impact are just a little wider, I think. But yeah, I don't know. I guess getting back to, you know, how the Thunder can play. Yeah, I love their athleticism. I mean, so Jeremy Grant's coming back. He picked up his team option. That's correct. That's accurate.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So yeah, you got George, Robertson, Grant, like they're damn long, damn athletic. Springy. I mean, Westbrook is Westbrook. He's a little floozy off the ball at times and even on the ball a little bit, gambles a little bit too much. But when locked in, I mean, he's probably the most athletic player in the league. So, like, yeah, no, I really like what they've got going for them.
And they could be so good in transition, too, because I could just really easily see all of these long guys getting into passing lanes. And they have one of the best transition ball handlers. Granted, one of the most reckless transition ball handlers, but certainly one of the toughest to guard and more intimidating transition ball handlers in the NBA in Russell Westbrook. And if you can get steals or get deflections, and you can do them in a disciplined fashion, like the way that Robertson tends to do when he gets them, if you can get blocks like Robertson does. I mean, Robertson's one of the best shot-blocking wings in the league, the way he gets those in transition, or even he blocks guys that he's guarding. Like, he doesn't block shots in help. Like, he blocks guys that he's guarding, which is extraordinarily rare for a wing to be able to have that type of skill. I mean, we could probably count the amount of players in the league who can do that legitimately well as wings and guards on one hand, right? Who can block the
guy. And doing it without fouling, which is the most amazing part. And, you know, when you watch him, you know, he sticks up his hand as a mirror with the ball, like, it just so well without fouling. I really appreciate, you know, his on-ball ability. But that's like one of the hardest things to do in the NBA is to get a hand on a jump shot on the perimeter, like, without fouling consistently. It's really impressive.
Yeah, it is. It is extremely impressive. And they just their ability to create these loose balls, I think they could be really good in transition. This roster is shaping up to be, I mean, they still have other things to do. They need a backup point guard. They need to just fill out the rest with their minimum guys too. We'll see what happens with Nick Collison. This roster is shaping up to be a pretty damn good one, I think.
Yeah, I'm quickly scanning to see what free agents are available. So I guess I'm just quickly looking at my little spreadsheet here. So they have not used their mid-level yet, and it looks like they'll have the taxpayer.
Well, that's for Patrick Patterson.
Yes. Okay.
They've got minimums, and they've got a $4.9 million trade exception.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I forgot about Patterson there when we were just talking about defense. I think he's a pretty underrated guy, and you can play him at the five even a little bit if you're switching one through five. So that's really interesting too. I think what's really interesting will be, you know, with George in the mix, you just talked about how dangerous they can be in transition. And that was kind of their MO last year, which was get stops, give the ball to Russell. Russell goes 94 feet. I think with George in the fray now, I don't know. Don't you think it might make a little bit more sense to slow the tempo down a little bit and play with a little more control, knowing that you have, such an effective weapon in the half court to get efficient looks off?
I tend to be a believer that when you have a young, athletic team, I mean, the world's least or the league's least efficient team in transition, like the points per possession that it's getting in transition is still better than the best half court offense. So I tend to be, I mean, if you're averaging like 1.02 points in transition or some points per possession in transition or something like that, which is a low number in transition, I mean, that's going to put you at the bottom of the league. Like, that's still above the best half-court offenses. The best half-court offenses are a shade usually below. They're around one point per possession or something like that in transition, 0.98. They're usually in that range. That's like your number one. So I'm a believer that if you think you can be a good transition team, you gun in those transitions, then don't force them. Don't force them if you want to control pace, you want to control efficiency. Like, if you can get Matt, they don't even need to just, like, get it. When I say transition also, I don't necessarily mean, like, putting up a shot within 6 seconds. Like, if they can just rush down the court and they can run and then get into their half court from there, they'll be able to take advantage of so many more mismatches. And, like, they could end up with a big guarding Paul George or Russell Westbrook. They could end up with a small guarding Steven Adams. And all of a sudden you have post opportunities, you have pick and roll opportunities, you have ISO opportunities you wouldn't otherwise have. And I think these are all things they're going to be able to capitalize on better than they were last year, especially because they're just a more equipped offensive team.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I guess the more interesting question here is how good in the half court will this offense be? Because, I mean, last year it was basically just Russell Westbrook and, a steady diet of him attacking the rim, him assaulting the basket, him, you know, those one dribble pull-ups, that cotton shot. So, like, with Paul George in the mix, like, Paul George is really good off the ball. He can run pick and roll, obviously, as a primary weapon. But, I mean, he's extremely good running off screens. And I think, you know, playing at the four on offense more, I think he'll do that a little bit more this year than he did last year with the Pacers when they typically relied on two traditional bigs. I don't see the Thunder doing that as much. So, like, I think this team's potential in the half court is really interesting. Like, do you think they have enough shooting? Like, how successful do you think they can be in the half court?
I think they could be decent. They were, like, one of the five worst teams in the NBA in half court offensive efficiency last year. Like, they were really a bad, like, one of the worst teams in the entire league. I think they're certainly going to be better than that. If only because, I mean, the thing that I've been pushing for a while is I think they're going to be smarter about playing the right personnel. Like, I think next year they're going to make more of an effort to get more shooting on the floor. Last year they were last in the league in three-point percentage, and they were a bad three-point shooting team regardless of who they played. But it was kind of a self-inflicted last place, and the reason I say that is because, like, they were playing Doug McDermott only sporadically when they should have been playing him more. They should have been playing Alex Abrines more when he looked legitimately comfortable and got really good at the end of the year and became a guy who could have gotten 20, 22 minutes a game and was still getting inconsistent minutes at the end, even though he was shooting 42% from three over the final 4 months of the season. And I think they're going to be a little more aware about getting shooting on the floor next year. I've certainly gotten indications about them doing that. And I think especially with the amount of versatile defenders they got out there, they now have the luxury of being able to put Nabrinas out there, who was not a good defender, but was a better team defender by the end of the year than he was at the beginning of the year. Having a McDermott out there and maybe being able to hide him, especially during the regular season when they're playing, you know, random January games against bad teams, I think they're going to be more they're going to try to get more shooting on the floor. They're going to make more of an effort to do it, and I think that's going to naturally improve the half-court offense already. Now all of a sudden you got two, you know, top 15 players out there with Westbrook and George. I think they at least have a good chance to be a middle of the pack half court offense. And if they do that and they have a really good transition offense, we're talking about one of the better offenses, you know, maybe a top 10 offense.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm willing to go top 10 just because I think there's a reason why they didn't play McDermott as much. I get your point about, you know, playing him in the regular season when it's much easier to hide guys.
Well, they went the weird way with McDermott, where they played him more in the postseason than they did in the regular season.
Well, he just got, like, they kind of had to in that series just because, you know, to beat that team, you got to score points. My memory of that series is basically just every single time McDermott was on the floor attacking him in the pick and roll, like using his man to screen for Harden just about every single time. Like if Kanter wasn't on the floor, it was McDermott. So it's just a really tricky thing. And I think that might be why Billy Donovan is just hesitant to even bother playing him in the regular season because can't play him in the playoffs. So if these are your reps, these are your reps. But I don't know. I don't know where the shooting comes from. I think Abrines is a pretty good shooter. I think Patterson.
They're going to be bottom half of the league in terms of a shooting team. I'm with that for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, Russell Westbrook is not a great shooter, and he doesn't really space the floor. He provides gravity in other ways, and it'll be interesting to see how often they play with George as the primary initiator with Russell off ball. I think that could be a little interesting of a wrinkle. But yeah, I don't know. I mean,
it's hard to say without roster is complete. It's hard to say without roster is complete. Like when I say, by the way, they could be a top 10 offense, like I'm talking about capping out. I don't necessarily know if that's definitely what's going to happen. I think they're certainly bound for top 10 defense. If they're not top 10 defense, then this thing has gone wrong. Because they were 10th in defense this year, and they should be better next year, especially with like anticipated improvements from Steven Adams and that stuff. But I think they can cap out at like a top 10 offense with the way that they're going. We'll see what the rest of the moves are, though.
Yeah, I mean, they got to move the ball a little bit better. But just like how this team is constructed is really interesting to me because it's like, so Kevin Durant leaves and then it's Westbrook and it's kind of, everything's kind of in shambles. It's like, just like a hurricane hit the roster. And then you trade Oladipo and then you trade Oladipo along with Sabonis a year later and you get this guy who, you know, I agree with you. I think he's a top 15 player. I think this is a really convenient role for him playing as the, you know, the secondary option with someone who, you know, is a top five player. But it's just like, he's kind of like a pseudo KD. I see a lot of similarities in their game, in their body type and just how they carry themselves on the court. It's just a really interesting, like, it doesn't feel like there was a lot of, it sounds like I'm insulting Presti, but I'm not. It doesn't feel like there's a lot of thought put into this roster, if that makes any sense. It's just kind of, here we go. Here's Russell Westbrook. Here's Paul George. Here are these other pieces. And I don't know how well they fit, if that makes any sense.
Well, I think that was truer last year.
I felt
that way about last year's roster. I think I see the direction that Presti is going in with this roster. I think he wants versatile defenders around a couple other shooters that he has on the roster, and he wants guys who are going to perform well off the ball offensively next to two ball-dominant guys in Paul George and Russell Westbrook. Like, it's not as good as the Durant rosters. That's not my argument at all. It's clear. It's not as good as those championship-caliber Durant rosters. But the formula seems to be inspired from some of that.
Yeah. I mean, it just feels like... I get what you're saying, and I think adding someone like Patterson, that's like a logical addition that makes a lot – it just makes a ton of sense. He's a perfect fit besides these guys. It's like a spot-up four who could play a little bit of five. But I don't know. It feels like it's just a scrambling situation. And, you know, you look at George's free agency coming up and – you know, George has said, or his intermediaries have said multiple times that he's going to the Lakers. And if George goes to the Lakers, then like, where are the Thunder after that? So it's just like there's this air of uncertainty. There's an air of urgency about this team. And I just I'm very interested to watch them play and watch how they come together and watch how the chemistry unfolds. But I don't know. I, you know, for the past 5 years, you could kind of like point out who is a Thunder player, and like you could throw a name out there and be like, this guy is a Thunder player. And I don't really feel like that's the case anymore. And I know it's like 12:36 right now Eastern Time, and what I'm saying might not make any sense. I hope it does. But the bottom line, my point is that I'm very interested to see what's going to happen with this Thunder team. I don't know. They might be a lot worse than I think a lot of people think. They might be a 5 seed in the West. Nothing would really surprise me.
I have one reaction to that opinion. Great.
Give it to me.
Great use of intermediaries.
Thank you.
You never hear anybody just casually drop intermediaries so conversationally.
Yeah, my vocabulary really sprouts to life this hour.
That's where it comes in. Do you want to take – you have 5 minutes to discuss Marcus Smart stuff? Your boy?
You mean Gordon – can I talk about Gordon Hayward? I mean, it's – yeah, I mean
– no, let's talk about what relates to the
– okay, okay.
You talk about Gordon Hayward later, right? We can talk about Gordon Hayward at Vegas Summer League.
Okay, can I ask you who – okay, let me ask you a question. So the Celtics need to move, most likely. The Celtics need to shed at least one of Crowder, Bradley, and Smart. Who do you think they're going to trade?
Well, it sounds like Crowder going to Utah in some sort of worked-out sign-in trade would be the most likely.
I don't mean to cut you off, but – this, I don't know the specific details on this. It seems to me a little ludicrous, though.
I don't know why the Celtics would do that. Wouldn't he be the best four to put next to Hayward? Like, if you could choose to get rid of one of them. If I personally could choose to get rid of one of them, I mean, I feel like you're gonna be disappointed in this. I would choose Marcus Smart. I would, even acknowledging Avery Bradley's an unrestricted free agent next year.
Yes, and I think – I tweeted this today. If you follow the money, Avery Bradley is most likely to go just because I think he's going to garner a huge contract next
summer. Yeah, he's an excellent player.
Whereas we're having this conversation about Andre Roberson, a restricted free agent who, you know, is clearly more one-dimensional than well-rounded. And I think that, you know, Marcus Smart, his offensive game, I think, is much further along than Roberson. But at the same time, he is restricted. I think his market will not be robust next summer when teams, even fewer teams, have cap space to make a big offer. So that's why I don't think it makes sense to shed him. Crowder is on such a fantastic contract and, you know, ideally is a great fit at the four. You can play really big lineups where you have Smart running point, you have Jalen at the two, you have Hayward, you have Crowder, you have Horford. I mean, those lineups are going to be devastating. So
Can I cut you off for 1 second?
Yes. Yes, please.
I do want to explain why we're randomly talking about Boston right now on a Thunder podcast. Because I should have prefaced this in the beginning, because some listeners might be like, what the hell Why in the world did they just randomly transition into this? And the reason why is because with Gordon Hayward going to Boston, Boston does not have exactly max cap room. And they have to get rid of one of those three guys that we were talking about in order to create max cap room, presumably either without taking salary back or without taking back enough salary so that it would, you know, prevent them from obtaining max cap room. So there's a possibility of a proverbial salary dump with one of those guys, or at least getting rid of those guys for very little salary. Marcus Smart makes $4.5 million next year and then becomes an unrestricted free agent the following summer, or becomes a restricted free agent the following summer. Now the Thunder would be have a $4.9 million trade exception, which they would be able to absorb Marcus Smart in, and they could give up a draft pick or something like that to receive Marcus Smart, and the Celtics wouldn't receive any salary back in the deal, and they would be able to open up max space. Now, there are other teams that would be able to absorb Marcus Smart as well. There are teams that have cap space who'd be able to give up a pick, and they could just take him into their cap space. There are teams with trade exceptions. The Thunder are not the only one who could do it, but they are. They do have that Chicago unprotected second rounder. They have a couple other things they could potentially move. Now, I've spoken to people around, I don't know if you've, like, spoken to people yet about, like, a market for Smart or anything like that, and I don't think there's that much of a market for him from the impression of the people I've spoken to around the league. Like, I've heard some of those offers, and they're not that good. Like, I think...
Yes.
What do you mean, yes?
Which is why you do not trade him. If you can, okay, so just a hypothetical, like another scenario, like the Celtics are in a position, so Avery Bradley makes 8.8, so you could trade him out and take back, I think, between 5 and 6, and you can get a player who can help you win the championship next season. Whereas with Marcus Smart, if you dump him, the type of player you can get back is most likely on a minimum level deal. Or a future pick that is not going to score any points next season. So that's another reason why I don't see the value in dumping Smart, who may very well become, I know that this is where you think I'm probably drunk, but I think Marcus Smart can be a better player than Avery Bradley as soon as next season. So what I would say is, like,
you know why I'm laughing? You know what the shock? You know what the shocking hot take is in that statement from you? I'm what? Shocked that you don't already think he's better than Avery Bradley with the way that you talk about him.
Oh no! I mean, they're very different. I'll just say that. I will say that.
Yeah, because Avery Bradley is much better.
He's not much better. No, that's just not true. But. He's a more reliable shooter.
There are a few things. There are a few like basketball conversations I enjoy having more than ones in which I get to troll you about Marcus Smart.
Hey, you're not even trolling me, man. The guy was 3 wins away from the NBA Finals. That's all I got to say about it. 7 3-pointers. Come on,
he wins game. He's like that Ron Jaworski, Vince Young just wins games. That's what it is. That was the justification. Vince Young is completing 53% of his passes, but he just wins games.
Marcus Smart shot like 40% from deep in the playoffs this year. That's a fact, Fred. I don't know how you argue that.
Marcus Smart in 2015-16 had the worst three-point percentage ever for someone who attempted as many three-point attempts as him. And Marcus Smart the following year, which was last year, had the second worst percentage from three-point of anyone who attempted as many three-point attempts as him.
I don't know why you're bringing up the past.
We're in the present, man. Live now.
No, but I do think, in all seriousness, that in a situation where Marcus Smart is not asked to hoist three-pointers up off the dribble early in the shot clock, as you know, he, for whatever reason, had the green light to do all season long, in a situation where Gordon Hayward's on the team, where he's playing in lineups that feature Hayward and Isaiah Thomas, where he's, where his role basically changes. I think he's a better spot-up three-point shooter, especially from the corners, than his numbers dictate. And, I mean, if you look at his free-throw shooting, he's a pretty good free-throw shooter. I guess the bottom line is that I would not trade Marcus Smart over Bradley. And another interesting scenario that I think the Celtics could consider potentially, even though they really value their continuity, is taking Bradley and Crowder, packaging them together, bringing back someone who makes in the $13 million range, and then you can get a real player, like a very good player, next year, someone like Derek Favors, someone like Eric Gordon. I think that those are potential gets that they could explore. But yeah, there's a lot of options for the Celtics right now. And I guess, do you think Thunder fans would be excited if they got Smart in that exception?
Well, emotionally, yes, because he's an Oklahoma State guy.
Oh, yes.
Which is part of why it's a major talking point locally.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that completely slipped my mind.
Yeah, so emotionally, they 100% would be excited. I mean, maybe not the OU fans would be as excited, but the like the OSU fans would be extremely excited. Yes, I think they'd be excited. I think they got sick of struggling at backup point guard. I think he is better than a rookie. You know, he's obviously better than a rookie contract player. He's a good defender. He's a very thundery player, I feel like. Like, you talk about the prototypical Thunder player. I actually think he's a pretty thundery player. He defends well. He's long. He's athletic. He's strong. He's a high IQ player, and he can't shoot. And it's like the most Thunder player ever. So I think he fits that, like, Sam Presti mold. I know the Thunder have liked him for a while. Like, the Thunder do like him a lot. Maybe they'd be willing to give up something for him. I don't know what it would be other than that Chicago. They have Chicago's 2018 second-round pick, which for any second-round picks, that's probably about as good as you're going to get. It's unprotected. Chicago could end up being one of, like, the worst teams in the NBA next year, and that pick could be really high. And if you get, like, pick number 32, that's actually more valuable than pick number, like, 28, because you don't have to pay a guaranteed contract, and you don't have to deal with the rookie scale or anything like that. So that Chicago pick could be really valuable, but they have their 2018 first rounder is going to Utah. Their 2020, you know, 2 years after whenever the Utah pick conveys, it's going to Philadelphia. The soonest they can trade a first rounder is 2022. So they're a little bit tied up with that. But I'm curious to see, like, if they've liked Smart for a while, and if Boston does end up deciding that he's the one to go, your justification for why you think it's going to end up being Bradley makes a ton of sense. Like, that's extremely logical and it makes sense. But if they just decide, if they decide on Smart over Bradley, it's obviously because they decide we just think Avery Bradley is that much better than Marcus Smart. Like, they just believe that the divide in talent and in effectiveness between Avery Bradley is wider, and between Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart is wider than you believe it to be. And if they do decide on it being Marcus Smart, or maybe it's just because Marcus Smart, you know, maybe they find an easier way to get rid of Marcus Smart or something like that. But if they do end up having it be Marcus Smart, like, I think the Thunder are going to be in on that. I don't know if they'll get him, but they will be very, very intrigued. I'm sure there will be other teams too. Like, the Knicks will, and there will be other teams that'll be intrigued, but the Thunder, they'll be one of them.
Yeah. Just like thinking about the defensive potential of the Thunder, if they were to acquire Marcus Smart, that would be, I mean, that's top three defense potential, I would say. Like, if they're playing Smart 30 minutes a game, which I think you would. I'd have to look that over.
Tough with Robertson.
Right.
Because you're going to play Robertson, you still have Abrines there, and then you have Westbrook at the one, so.
Yeah, you could play, well, if you're playing, you could bump Robertson up to the three, George the four.
Sure, play Patrick Patterson Robertson 20 minutes game.
Robertson can play the four, too. I mean, that's a position that he played in college, and he did a little bit in the playoffs a couple years ago. But, yeah, no, that would be a ridiculous team that no one would want to play. Like, that would be very scary, because Marcus Smart is awesome.
That's a perfect note to end it on. When are you getting into Vegas? Friday
at 4:30.
Friday, 4:30. Hey, it's after midnight, so I'll officially see you tomorrow.
Great.
I'm getting in Friday at like 2.
Cool, man. I haven't even looked at the schedule.
No, I don't care about the schedule.
Yeah.
I just want to meet LeVar Ball.
Jesus.
I'm just hoping LeVar Ball will be there, and I want to meet him. And it's extremely unprofessional, but I want to get his autograph.
Okay. Yeah, I will not be there with you.
No, I won't. I won't get his autograph, but I do want to meet him and say hello because I want to see what he's like without a camera in his face.
I bet you $1,000 he's the exact same guy.
I hope so. I really hope he is.
I guarantee it.
I really hope he is.
Hey, were you at the draft? You weren't at the draft, right?
No, I was in Oklahoma. Presti does a press conference after.
Oh, okay.
This is turning into far too casual a conversation for entertaining podcasting.
No, but I asked you, this is for a reason. So at the draft, LeVar Ball, obviously there. And I don't know if you were watching on TV or if they even had this on TV, but when he left the table, he's like doing that. You know how he like struts like really oddly, like he's limping, but not. Anyway, he was doing that.
I do know.
Okay. So he's doing that and the crowd is booing like the loudest boos of the night by far. And he's drawing all this attention. And then he takes his hat, his Big Baller Brand hat, and like chucks it into the crowd. Was this on TV?
Yes, it was. When he threw the hat and he got booed. It was.
Seeing that, yeah, seeing that in person was just, it's like, what is even happening? Is this professional wrestling? And then like the next night or whatever, like he is on Monday Night Raw. So it's like, oh, okay, this is a very natural transition.
It was an extremely natural transition. What do you have to plug before we go?
Nothing. I mean, I wrote a piece about Gordon Hayward today. I'm writing a piece about these short-term contracts and the impact they'll have on the trade deadline tomorrow on vicesports.com. But I guess just follow me on Twitter at Michael V. Pina. That's where you can find basically everything that I do.
Great. And Pina, former colleague, we did work together, back in the Fox Sports days. I can say from a friend standpoint and from a colleague standpoint, one of the hardest working people in the entire industry, as you can tell by him getting on a podcast with me that he has no investment in at midnight on a random weekday. So thanks to Mike for coming on for the unscheduled Emergency Robertson pod. You can remember I'm on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, which means I will be back with another podcast tomorrow talking about whatever the heck happens tomorrow and maybe some more stuff. I'll have another guest or I'll do something solo. I don't even know yet. But you can head on to iTunes, subscribe to Locked On Thunder there. Questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. And you can also find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FredKatz. You're Michael V. Pina on Twitter?
Correct, sir.
The real MVP. Russell Westbrook won it, but Pina was already it. You log out to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs. And check out Thunder Road there. That's my blog, and you can see everything that's happening with the Thunder and with free agency. And you know what? Check out the Locked On Podcast Network, too. What's awesome about the network is that our entire model is set up so that, like, something happens, Robertson signs, or Patrick Patterson signs, or they trade for Paul George, or whatever it is, and like, boom, you've got a podcast within hours that you can listen to when you're going to work, or when you're going to school, or when you're doing whatever you're doing when you listen to podcasts, like within hours or the next morning or whatever it is. So I think it works out so nicely. It's like my favorite thing about doing this job, to where like people can get this immediate content. So if you're just a basketball fan in general who happens to listen to this and you're a fan of another team, or if you're just a fan who wants to hear something on another signing, or you know, you want to see what the reaction to Taj Gibson, you want to listen to the Timberwolves one or whatever it is, check that stuff out, because the Immediate Reaction podcasts, I think, are just awesome. And I'm really excited about what's going on with the network. But listen to Locked On Thunder the most, because that helps me the most. So that's, leave us good reviews. Nice 5-star reviews on iTunes would be nice too. That is going to do it for today. Back tomorrow. Thanks to Mike. Until tomorrow, Locked On Thunder is locking up.
Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate, and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High fashion,
Old Navy.
Valid 10-2 to 10-10. Select styles only.